economy, the climate, healthcare, or the war, you'll hear about it on KPFT.
That's why you listen, and it's why we're asking for your financial support today.
KPFT's membership is an investment that gives something back to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
KPFT depends on listeners like yourself for well over 90% of our operating budget.
Consider how much KPFT adds to your life while you are listening at home, work, and in your car.
Financial support from our members ensures that we continue to bring you the programs and services you've come to enjoy.
So please, make your contribution now.
Here's the number to call.
713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valensky.
And Jonathan Kraft.
Brian Levinka.
Summer Iman.
And Glenn Holt. And tonight on Queer Voices, after months of heated debate, San Antonio now has joined 180 other cities nationwide which have laws to prohibit discrimination on the basis of real or perceived sexual orientation or identification. The Oral Cancer Foundation Walk for Awareness in memory of Nathan Hart will take place this coming Saturday. We will have a discussion of oral cancer, its connection to the human papillomavirus, and how it may be spreading in the gay community. In our second hour in News Wrap, Pennsylvania's Montgomery County has appealed a state court order which stopped it from issuing marriage licenses to same-gender couples. Republican Governor Tom Corbett defended the state law, which prohibits marriage equality, by comparing the marriages of gay and lesbian couples to incest. And the attorneys who were victorious in the defeat of California's Proposition 8 case have now set their sights on Virginia. In the feature segments from This Way Out, Minnesota is home to a new multimedia project that aims to get people to start wearing the HIV/AIDS ribbon again. A review of the film The Happy Sad about open bisexuality and open relationships. And who wears the heels in your relationship and what does it mean? Syndicated lesbian columnist Abby Dees answers the age-old question, who the man? And, of course, around here, Jack is the man. So we just, he talks and we ignore him.
That's right. That's the way it's supposed to work, right? That's
actually, it is an incredible collaboration of people that come from different backgrounds here on Queer Voices. I'm very proud of everybody who contributes to this show. And I hope you feel that way. Because we've got 3 weeks of asking for money, and they upped our goals, which means it's going to be tough for us to do it, especially since we're on at 9 o'clock at night, and we know that the universal listenership of radio is down at that time as you get later into the night. But I would really, really appreciate it if you can help us out. And help us out, I mean help the station out, because that's really where the money goes. It certainly doesn't go into our pockets. We raise money here on KPFT to pay for the things, not for the staff, not for the volunteers, but pay for things like keeping the transmitter on, keeping us legal, keeping the small staff that keeps the whole station together, the technology that we have here, and it somewhat is in the dark ages, but at the same time, it's not. I mean, we really have a lot of things that do work here in the station, so it makes us easier for us to be able to do a show like this. So we're asking you if you can do that. We already have some people to thank that gave on the web, and we really appreciate that. We'll be thanking those people during the show. And you can go right to the web at kpft.org and make that pledge for this radio station and this show in particular. We're very proud of the show we do. We always try to do better. We're always open to for people's criticism, either good or bad, about what we do. So please call us. Call us at 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT.
to keep you at a length, far enough from me, 'cause I've been on my knees, begging God, oh please, feel the space within me that bleeds internally. And I pray nobody can see, for the life of me, I can't figure out love, no. And why it hurts so much. And oh, is it you that it hasn't stopped to rain? Watch every word that I say until my health began to fade. I couldn't seem to control my way. Yes, you can blame it on my pain. Then I heavily drank my way down a road that was not paved. For the life of me, I can't figure out you more. And all the hell you put me through. Oh, 'cause since you left, it hasn't stopped to rain.
A newly released song that was Mike Burns, and the name of the song, Awful Single. This is Queer Voices.
This is Jack Falinski. A few months ago, or not really, just recently, San Antonio passed a non-discrimination ordinance to include sexual orientation and gender identity. The vote was 8-3. With us on the line is Daniel Graney, who is co-chair of the Community Alliance for United San Antonio. And Daniel, I understand you also lived here in Houston for a number of years.
That is correct, Jack.
So now you know the both of the universes, that, and you were here during the time of the referendum here in Houston, and you know what happened. How did you all avoid that in San Antonio to be able to move forward?
Well, we haven't totally avoided that yet. You know, we just, City Council just passed this ordinance on September 5th, and the opposition threatening to, they're on a petition drive right now to collect signatures to force this on the ballot to seek repeal of the ordinance.
So they can do that in San Antonio just like they did that here in Houston?
Correct. But they have until October 15th to collect 77,000 plus you know, valid signatures. Otherwise, that will be the end of it.
Okay. And what do you think? Do you think they're going to be able to do it?
I have serious doubts that they will be able to. I mean, you know, that's about 40,000 more people, you know, than have actually voted in the city council elections in the past.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
it's a percentage. It's a percentage of the registered voters that have to
sign,
and they have to be valid signatures.
Valid, and people who actually voted, who were registered in the city at the time of the last municipal election, which was May of this year.
Oh, wow!
Therefore, if they cannot. You know, any signatures of voters who registered after that are not valid.
Okay, so give me a background of how this whole campaign went and how you worked on city council to bring up the issues and to explain why this was needed.
Well, you know, historically, in 1998, we attempted to get city council to amend our city employment non-discrimination ordinance to include sexual orientation. We also wanted gender identity, but the city attorney, you know, decided not to go with gender identity, but only sexual orientation. We had an individual here who worked behind the scenes, getting support from the six necessary council members to pass such a, you know, an amendment. But at the last minute, the religious right showed up in force and shouted them down. And our community was totally unorganized and caught flat-footed, and the amendment failed and was removed from the agenda for that meeting. So nothing has been tried until 2011. A group of us got together and decided let's reintroduce this, you know. Well, then we discovered that there were a number of non-discrimination ordinances in our city code, not just city employment, but housing, public accommodations, appointments to boards and commissions, and city contractors. So we worked with, we had a meeting with the mayor of San Antonio, and of course, you know, he's a rising star in the Democratic Party.
Yes, yes.
And a progressive, and he was very open to for pushing this forward. And we had a lead council member, Diego Bernal, from District 1, who was willing to carry the water for us on this, on city council.
So does something like this have to come from the mayor, or could it come from a particular council member?
It can come from a particular council member.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Unlike in Houston, where it really has to come from the mayor.
Oh, yeah, that's correct. We have a city manager form of government here compared to Houston, which is more of a strong mayor form of government.
Okay, and about how many of you were working on this behind the scenes?
Well, we started this in 2011, just a handful of us in the LGBT community, and we decided to expand it to include representatives from all the major LGBT organizations. And, we were waiting because, you know, we were developing our coalition just gradually. And then the city council decided that they wanted to include domestic partner benefits in the budget for 2011. So that kind of threw us off stride, and we had to get behind that.
Right, yeah.
And that passed. So after that passed in September of 2011, we got back to the drawing board working on the non-discrimination ordinance. And Human Rights Campaign got involved, Equality Texas got involved. We had all major LGBT organizations, and we decided to expand our coalition to include labor groups, faith groups.
And tell me about the faith groups.
Things like that.
Now, you know, I'm San Antonio has, and I don't know the exact number, but is a much more Catholic city than Houston is, correct?
I guess you could say so, because it's a predominantly Hispanic city, 60% Latino in population, and majority of them are Roman Catholic, yes.
And, well, let's expand that on to the Hispanic community. How well was that received?
Well, all of our council members who supported the ordinance were from predominantly Hispanic districts.
Interesting.
And the only ones that really opposed it were from the far north side, which are predominantly Anglo and Republican. And the one council member of color, African American, who voted against it, which we were very disappointed she did that, was from the east side of town.
Now, are all your council members elected in the districts?
Yes, we have single-member districts.
Okay. Houston has a mixture of single-member and at-large.
Correct.
Just to give the differences there.
Right.
As it was coming up, did you see it being possibly torpedoed, or did it look like everything was sort of working as it finally came up to a vote?
Well, there were, to borrow an overused phrase, the stars were kind of aligned in our favor.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
We had our municipal elections in May, and we were able to defeat an incumbent council member who was opposed to this ordinance and put a more progressive council member in his place. And we also elected a more progressive council member in the North Side district. So we felt very confident in May that we had sufficient votes to pass this ordinance back then, provided these council members held firm and didn't waver. but there were developments that occurred because the right wing ratcheted up their efforts. And the longer the vote on this was postponed, because it was postponed several times, of course, this gave the opposition more time to organize.
Sure. Sure. Now, was most of the media behind you or not?
The media?
Yes.
Behind us.
Okay, okay.
Media especially.
Yeah, the local media, Now, I also see it draw some attention to the right wing statewide.
Yes.
Okay.
Very interesting. Yeah, Greg Abbott, you know, the attorney general who's now running for governor, weighed in on this, threatened to sue the city, but then withdrew from that. We had some other, candidates who are going to run for, like, lieutenant governor, and, of course, Senator Ted Cruz weighed in on it, too, which I find it really odd.
Yes.
the fact of the matter is, these politicians don't even realize that we have three cities before San Antonio that already have a fully inclusive citywide non-discrimination ordinance: Austin, Dallas, and Fort Worth. So what were they going to do about those cities?
Yes. So tell me now, what does this in ordinance include now that it's passed? Does it include city contractors?
Yes, it does.
Wow, that's pretty progressive.
Yes.
And what are the mechanisms to check up on whether somebody is violating this ordinance?
Well, this is a very good question. In a way, the ordinance does not go as far as we would like it to go. For example, while it does include city employees, it does not include citywide employment, like private employers of 15 or more.
Okay.
Which Austin's, Dallas's, and Fort Worth does include. So we're disappointed that they decided not to go with that part of it. And it does not include a human rights commission or some kind of office to handle all these discrimination claims. Presently, we have a housing office in the city manager's office that handles housing discrimination claims. And, of course, the city employment discrimination claims would be handled by the city's human resource department. But we have no mechanism to handle claims of discrimination in places of public accommodation. And city contractors, basically, they have to sign a contract that includes a commercial anti-discrimination clause. And, they could lose their contracts if they violate that clause.
Okay, but this is actually a very good first step, don't you think?
Yes. We wish we would have done the whole nine yards.
Right.
Given all the pushback we have received and all the, publicity and everything, we could have declared victory and just moved on. But no, we haven't finished it yet. So.
Okay.
But it is a good step. Yes, a good first step.
Okay. And any lessons you want to tell us about it that maybe we could learn from?
Well, when you're building a coalition to garner community support, which is very, very crucial, because if you don't, then the opposition will swoop in and, dominate the messaging. And so it was important that we build a broad-based coalition, which we tried, which we did, which we could have built even broader. But you have to work with the city council and the mayor, make sure you have advocates there, and dealing with their timelines sometimes conflicts with your own timelines because of political timings and all that kind of stuff. And, of course, you deal with the opposition, and then you deal with some infighting within your own coalition.
Yeah.
As you well know, within our LGBT community, historically, we've had, you know, conflicts between, you know, different organizations. And those did flare up from time to time, but we were able to listen to everybody and get them back on message. And, you know, so we were unified at the very end.
We're talking to Danielle Graney from San Antonio. Now, what about the component of gender identity? Was that a hard sell to the city council?
Well, our coalition made it very clear from the very beginning, back in 2011, that that was a non-negotiable. Gender identity had to be included as part of this. And we got buy-in from the mayor and from Diego Bernal and most of the council members who supported us on that. Toward the end, of course, the right wing tried to instill fear and through misrepresentation by bringing up the whole bathroom issue. But we held firm on that. Our council members still voted in favor of including gender identity, notwithstanding all those scary, horrible things that they try to portray out there. So
where do you go now?
Right now, there are efforts to recall Councilman Bernal going on and to repeal the ordinance, and they'll probably go after the mayor and other council members who voted for the ordinance. So we think it's a cooling off period right now to see where all these recall and repeal efforts go, because unlike the repeal effort for the ordinance, there's no time limit on collecting sufficient signatures to put a recall election on the ballot.
Now, are your council members elected for 4 years?
2 years.
2 years, like Houston.
We have 4 2-year terms. Those are our term limits.
Okay, we have 3 2-year terms. Okay. Well, Daniel, I thank you very much for joining us and to give us some insight on what was done there in San Antonio. I hope someday we'll have the same thing here in Houston, and eventually someday in San Antonio you'll be able to add to that. But I guess you got to sort of like just keep it where it is right now.
Exactly, and we're going to debrief and then plan for the future, notwithstanding all these recall efforts. So thank you very much for this opportunity, and I wish all the best for Houston's efforts as well.
Well, thank you. Daniel Graney is the co-chair of the Community Alliance for the United San Antonio, the people who fought to put the non-discrimination ordinance in San Antonio. You're listening to Queer Voices.
What used to be the best of me now makes a bloody mess of me. I had no direction home, but you're so new and bright to me. There's no more cold and night in me. I used to fall down on my own. I was lost in my head, trying to forget. Before you, for you, there was a time before you see when all I cared about was me, so oblivious to everything. You said there had to be a way for me to find a sunny day, and now you make me wanna sing. I was lost in it will burst in me. Everything I cursed in me has disappeared to set me free. Oh, before you, I never really had a chance.
But you broke across the walls and me.
Before You Go, that was Cheyenne Jackson, and from the album I'm Blue, comma, Skies, released this year. This is Queer Voices.
Well, we do have a couple people to thank who've already given via the web before the show even started. Fernando Franco, Reverend Yay. Burton Bagby Gross, and Liz James all gave nice donations to the show, but we still have a long way to go. And like I said, they upped our quota because the reality is that the station hasn't been raising the money it needs to. The good thing is that KPFT is on better financial grounds than the other stations. Of course, some of the other stations are in pretty bad shape. If you read some of the stuff, the New York station and the San Francisco station, but the Houston Pacifica station, we sort of stretch every dollar we can, and believe me, we don't throw the money around. If you look at our studios or our building here, it's pretty old and it's pretty ragged. Luckily, we're mostly able to keep on the air, not like the old days when we used to go off the air a lot. We're streaming on the web, so you can listen to us. You can go to our website and download previous talk shows that were done so that you, you know, in case you missed something, it's there. So we've tried to do our best to keep up with technology. Queer Voices has its own website, and we put our schedule up every week. And I didn't realize this, and I think JD actually told me at one point, but today I actually noticed on Wikipedia there's a JD Doyle page, and it talks about him being part of this radio show and his queer music heritage that he does. So I'm really proud of the fact that J.D. Doyle has his Wikipedia page to, you know, that we, it's another way to outreach about what he does and how he participates in Queer Voices. So please, if you can do it, if you can go to kpft.org or call us up at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. We could really use your help to keep this radio station, this show in particular, going.
Yeah, this is Jonathan Kraft here, and, you know, I just, not to be cliche or anything, but, you know, I just have to start off by saying I love this show. It is one of the favorite things that I'm doing with my life. It's just so much fun. I get to meet so many amazing people. I get to interview people and learn about things that I never would have, you know, researched on my own, most likely. I mean, we have an interview about oral cancer coming up, and I will admit right now I don't know the first thing about oral cancer. And it's just, I love this show. And, you know, the reality of it is that in order to continue to do this show, we do need to bring in, you know, money. We do need to raise funds. And that is certainly not something that's in my personality. It's not something I enjoy listening to. But, you know, the reality of our situation is that, yeah, we love the show. We do a really high quality show for what it is. And we need to raise some money. And, you know, aside from loving the show, I love Houston. You know, I went to college in Boston and went to grad school in London and then came back here because I just love Houston that much. I mean, we are really unlike any...
You fool?
I disagree.
I'm laughing at you, too, because Boston is a really neat city. I got to spend some time up there, and I spent a semester in London also.
Uh-huh.
And I sort of landed here by accident in Houston. I went to work for a commercial radio station, thought I'd never stay here. But there was some opportunities here, not only professionally, but also in the fact of volunteering. Houston, there are organizations that you can get involved in and work in and be part of and actually help build. And I'm really proud of the fact of everybody who contributes to Queer Voices. It's something that we do to try to make this a really good show, to try to also reach things that nobody else is doing in the community of segments. Sometimes we do the same things year after year, some of the events that go on, but we also do try to reach out in the fact that the community is changing all the time. There are groups that come and go. There are people that are doing things that, you know, nobody else knows about. We are do our best to try to find and research those things.
And that's something that I think is really, really unique with this particular show, is because, you know, we don't have corporate sponsorship. We don't, you know, get money and income from commercials, you know. Realistically, this show and a lot of the shows on KPFT is just four, five, or six highly, highly committed people who are really just committed to, you know, getting the word out about things. And, you know, that's really remarkable about this show. And one of the really cool things is that, you know, it's not, it doesn't answer to anybody but you. Like, we don't have to, you know, keep any sort of corporate sponsors happy. Like, we answer 100% to you, our listeners. And, you know, the cool thing is that, you know, since we are, you know, we're just people. I mean, you know, Jack has radio experience, but, you know, none of us are, like, professional radio people. We're just, you know, we're just, we are a part of the community, and we get to do our show about our community. And that's something that's really cool. So it's almost like Houston and the gay community in Houston has its own just custom-made radio program for 2 hours every Monday night.
Well, the interesting thing is my radio experience was more as a technician. Glenn is the one that really has had on-air radio experience professionally. So yeah, we may not have the best sounding voices. We may not know all the things about how you do radio professionally, but actually in some ways, if you listen to commercial radio and you listen to some of the programs here on non-commercial radio, we are much more committed to talking about the issues of bringing the people on the show who have vested interest in certain organizations that they want to talk about. What we don't do is we have the screaming and yelling match and the arguments type of stuff that's done on, like, Fox, because we think that that doesn't quite work that way. We're here to, we're advocate journalists, you know, no two ways about it. We talk about not just what it's about to be GLBT, but also working within the bigger world. Just like this interview I just did a few minutes ago about San Antonio, that the people brought up a non-discrimination ordinance, worked behind the scenes to get council to approve it. Someday I hope we'll have the same thing here in Houston. And the fact that they worked on it, they you know, they still don't know, because there could be a petition drive to take it down, or they can recall some of the people or vote out some of the people that supported them. So it's a never-ending struggle that we have here, and that's why we're on the air.
You know, I want to kind of give a shout-out to the volunteers who are out in the studio right now waiting for the phone to ring, 713-526-5738. They are literally outside waiting for the phone to ring, and I want to highlight Angie Gabriella. She was listening to the show last week, and she loved what she heard on Queer Voices, so she decided that she would come this week and volunteer to answer the phones and pick up the phone when you call and pledge money to 713-526-5738. We need those phones to ring. When you pledge, you're voting that you like Queer Voices and LGBT radio in Houston, and we're very unique, and I've been doing this a couple of years, and there's been nothing that even comes close to what we do in terms of programming and in terms of events and highlighting what's going on in the community. And it's not free. This is where you pay. We don't do this all the time, but we do have to do it a couple times a year, and this is the time. So please call Angie, 713-526-5738, or donate online at kpft.org.
So, you know, we try to keep the show in doing interesting interviews all the time. We're always interested in your input if you have some suggestions. We try to cover the topics. I mean, I've been around when HIV/AIDS started, and we had to do some of the toughest programs we ever did. Before Queer Voices, there was a show called Wildenstein that I participated in, Ray Hill before me. And I do remember that we had a incredible person named Mike that was doing the show for a long time, and he did his best to keep on the show until he got really, really sick. And We actually had an event here at KPFT where we spread his ashes out in the backyard. That's the type of commitment that people have to this radio station because they really believe in it. People who may be out there trying to look for a job instead of doing some of the stuff they do here. But the reality is people love this station in many ways. And sometimes we fight over it because we all have different ideas of how the station should be run and what type of programming that should be on it. But overall, the programming here on KPFT is dedicated to the listeners. It's not dedicated to any advertisers. It's not dedicated to any person who, and we have the most incredible control of each programmer of our editorial content. That's unheard of in commercial radio. They don't dictate us on what we have to do or what we have to say. As long as we keep into the FCC regulations, we're able to, and we stay away from commercialization, that we're able to bring people in from the community. And Queer Voices, we also try to keep it local as much as possible. Unless there's some real, like tonight, talking about what they did in San Antonio, because someday I hope we could do it here, that we really try to make this a local effort of what we do here on KPFT and Queer Voices. So we're asking you to pick up the phone. Call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT, or go right to the website, kpft.org, and you can donate online.
Here come the lesbians. Here come the leading lesbians. We're going to please and tease you, hypnotize and tight and squeeze you. We're going to get you if we can.
Here come the lesbians.
Don't go and try to fight it. Run away or try to hide it. We want your love and that's our plan.
Here come the lesbians.
Don't look in the closet. What's creeping down the stairs? We're slipping up behind you.
Watch out, better beware.
This is J.D. Doyle, and while I'm not sure about the leaping, there will be a lesbian event this weekend in Houston. Celebrating our lesbian legacies is a conference put on by the Old Lesbian Oral Herstory Project on October 10th through 13th at the Houston Marriott South at Hobby Airport. This year's conference features keynote speaker Lillian Faderman, a historian and award-winning author. She'll be joined by singer-songwriter-author Jamie Anderson, who will also speak about women's music. Additional entertainment will be by Austin's magical, comical, talented The Therapy Sisters. And our mayor, Anise Parker, will speak on Sunday at the event. The weekend will be filled with panel discussions, presentations, group discussions, and much more. I'm personally honored in that I've been asked to take part in a panel discussion on women's music and culture, so you can see everyone is welcome. You can find out more at a Facebook event page called Celebrating Our Lesbian Legacies, and you can register at their website. Again, it's put on by the group Old Lesbian Oral Herstory Project. So their site is at www.olohp.org. Hope to see you there.
Here come the lesbians!
Here come the lesbians!
Here come the lesbians!
Here come the lesbians!
Here come the lesbians.
This is Queer Voices.
This is Brian Levinka.
And Jonathan Kraft.
And I have to admit that on the next topic, I don't really know a lot, and I don't know if Jonathan does either.
What, you don't either?
Well, we're going to learn as interviewers and as an audience about oral cancer and an upcoming event and having awareness around that. In the studio, we have Susan Pan-Smith and Eric Statler. Did I pronounce that properly?
Statler.
Statler. Oh, I butchered that. I hate when people butcher my name. Well,
yeah,
okay.
Thanks, man.
We want to talk about oral cancer. There is a walk coming up, but let's talk about oral cancer first and who's at risk and kind of what are the leading causes and how do you catch?
Well, the leading cause of oral cancer today is actually the human papillomavirus, or HPV. HPV is the most common sexually transmitted infection in the world. It's estimated that 8 out of 10 people by the time they're 50 will come in contact with this infection. And it's the number one cause of cervical cancer, anal and penile cancer, and oral cancers. The leading demographic is right now in oral cancers are young men between the ages of 20 and 50 years old with none of the traditional risk factors, like smoking and drinking, which are traditionally have been the leading causes of oral cancer up until about 1972, when that disease took a change during the sexual revolution. And Dr. Morg Gillison of The Ohio State University has done some great research on it and followed the numbers over the last, 30-some-odd years, 40 years, and showed how the disease went from a smoking-related disease to now really a sexually transmitted disease.
And is that especially hitting the gay community?
Well, when you look at primarily caused by oral sex, so you would think so. I mean, let's face it, most of us have had oral sex, and if you haven't, you're missing out. Like that.
Now, Susan, what is your role? How are you involved?
I am the co-chair of the first inaugural Oral Cancer Foundation Walk for Awareness here in Houston. It's in memory of Nate Hart, who is a graduate of Waltrip High School and a local young man.
And how did you come to co-chair this?
I'm also an oral cancer survivor. I had squamous cell carcinoma of the left lateral tongue in 2007.
And how did you beat it, or did you?
That's probably a good part of what our event is about. Much like breast cancer, the secret to beating this is to find it early, to get treated early, and then the outcomes are much better. I was fortunate. I found mine early stage one, and so I just simply had to have surgery.
How did you find it?
Strangely enough, I noticed a bump on the side of my tongue. I happened to be in a car accident and decided to ask my doctor about it.
Wow. And so was it painful? I mean, what can we learn from
it? For most people, it looks and feels a lot like a canker sore. Mm-hmm. Anything that's in your mouth that's unusual and lasts more than 2 weeks is something you should have a doctor look at.
Very good.
And you were able to beat it.
I was very fortunate. Again, it was stage one, and the gentleman that the walk is in memory of had the exact same diagnosis as I did. He was 25 at the time of his diagnosis, and again, same place, same location. I was 50.
He was 25.
Mm-hmm. And wow. If you look at the demographics, you'd think the 25-year-old guy would have a better shot at beating this. The big difference between the two of us was his was not found until the latter stages, stage four. And the odds of beating it are much, much greater if you find it early.
And it spreads quickly, I kind of read. Is that true?
It moves very rapidly.
Wow. So how are you going about getting awareness out? I mean, you're doing the walk, but what else are you doing?
Part of what we're doing at the walk is we're offering free oral cancer screenings for anybody who wants to have it done there. It's a very simple process. It basically, and Eric can give you more of the details, but it basically is using a fluorescent device to look in the oral cavity to see if you have any lesions and also to do an external exam of your neck and lymph node areas.
And the fluorescent will highlight that, or what happens?
Well, yeah, fluorescent technology, and a lot of this was developed here locally at MD Anderson. Precancerous lesions within the mouth will lose fluorescent under fluorescent light, so they'll go dark. And there was a study done at the University of Washington in 2010 where they showed that a team of oral medicine professionals could only visually identify precancerous and early cancerous oral cancers about 70% of the time. While our front line of defense, our dental hygienists and dentists, they don't deal with oral cancers all the time. In fact, by the numbers, before this disease started growing like it was, they would only see a case of oral cancer once every 4 years. So their statistic chance of finding it early was very low. And they developed this technology that can find the front of the mouth lesions earlier on. One of my roles with the Oral Cancer Foundation, I'm a stage 4 oral cancer survivor myself. The right half of my face has pretty much been removed and replaced due to my cancer diagnosis. I had over 40 lymph nodes removed from my neck. And because of how late, I had less than a 20% chance of living in 5 years, and I just hit my 5-year mark.
Wow.
The OR Cancer Foundation's online forums and with the support of other survivors helped get me through. And since then, I've been traveling the country educating our medical and dental folks about this disease and helping raise awareness, because the earlier you find it, the better. Of course, educating our dental professionals, because the disease has changed, is important, because a lot of our practicing dentists out there who are the front line of this disease are unaware that HPV is now the leading cause of oral cancer. And those tumors present differently than smoking and drinking related tumors do. So it's important to get the word out there, and for people to go into their dentist every 6 months just to get checked, knowing that 8 out of 10 people are at risk for this disease.
Now, our dentists, are they screening now? Is it an education process?
Oral cancer screenings haven't changed in 40 years. The intra and extra oral screenings haven't changed, but largely because it's been associated with tobacco. For years, the demographic of oral cancer was the 65-year-old white guy that smoked and drank for 40 years. And when that started changing in the 70s, they weren't able to actually pinpoint that. They didn't know. And because there's no continuing education that requires a dentist to regularly go back out and educate themselves about the disease, they've been kind of unaware. And because of that, it's now the second leading cause of dental malpractice.
Because they're not catching it. And when you're going out and talking to people, what is their reaction? Do they want to know about it, or are they...
I'm requested to come speak at colleges. I've spoken at some of the largest colleges and most successful dental programs in the country. And, it's interesting when you talk to people and you tell them that you can actually get cancer from sex and oral sex. And that's something they want to know about, because let's face it, sex is a great pastime.
Well, in your 20s, you're invincible, right?
Hey, I was 33 when I was diagnosed with oral cancer, and I thought I'd live forever. And it wasn't until I was faced with a late-stage cancer diagnosis that it actually woke me up and thought, you know what, I better educate myself or I might pass away.
And educate others, too.
That's been my mission, is to get the word out there and to save other people from what we faced. And Nathan Hart, I was fortunate to meet Nathan a couple of days after his diagnosis, and him and I became fast friends. And to watch that young man go through what he went through. His cancer came back 4 times, and they ended up removing his entire tongue, his esophagus, after going through radiation to the head and neck twice, which is, radiation to the head and neck is one of the most brutal things that you'll go through. And the pain associated with it, we were both put on a drug called fentanyl, which is roughly 100 times stronger than heroin.
Wow.
And you're put on large amounts of that drug because of how much pain you're in. And to watch that young man go through what he did, and knowing that it's largely preventable, it motivates you to go out there and do something about it to save lives, and it's through awareness, really just telling them to go in and get checked, and educating our dental professionals can save people from that horrible fate.
And along that line, I did want to note that UT Health, School of Dentistry here in Houston, has joined us and has partnered with the Walk, and they're doing a lot with their program to make sure that dentists that are coming out of school have the skills.
If you're joining us, we're speaking with Susan Pansmith and Eric Statler about the Oral Cancer Foundation's upcoming walk. And let's talk about the walk itself. That is this Saturday, correct?
Yes, it is.
At 8 a.m. And where's it going to be?
Okay, registration starts at 8 a.m. It's going to be at Studi Park.
Okay.
Right there on White Oak Bayou, right off of I-10. The walk itself, we start with some guest speakers as part of our opening ceremony. We are fortunate to have Randall Weber, who is the chair of Head and Neck Department at MD Anderson, as one of our featured speakers.
That's pretty impressive. He was there.
Yes, he is. Also, Mark Chambers, who's the chief dental oncologist from MD Anderson, will be joining us, and Eric is going to speak as a survivor. From there, we'll move into the actual walk. We have some raffle items and silent auction items, and we also have hopefully a band and some food at the end of the event.
What is your overall goal with this walk? Is it to get the word out, to educate, to kind of let people know and to go get checked? Or what are you trying to accomplish?
I think that's the big thing. As I said, myself, when I was diagnosed, I had no idea that oral cancer existed, that tongue cancer existed. I had found a bump on the side of my tongue. It was kind of innocuous. It didn't mean much to me. And the last thing I expected a doctor to tell me was that I had cancer. Taken totally off guard. And when I found out that this cancer is on the rise and that most people don't even know to look for it, that became important to me, to get that word out there. When I look at myself versus Nate, I know that the difference is that mine was found and treated early. And I want that advantage for everybody.
Do they have percentages on how the survival rate if you find it early?
Well, yeah. Stage 1 diagnosis is over 90% survival rate.
90%.
Overall, 57% of the people that are diagnosed with oral cancer will be dead in 5 years. And that's alarming. If you look at in comparison, awareness saves lives. Early detection saves lives. If the breast cancer awareness movement has done anything, it's been to raise breast cancer survival rates from the mid-60s in the early 80s when, like, Susan G. Komen started to. Right now, breast cancer has over a 90% survival rate because of the early detection and awareness. And that's what we're hoping to do with oral cancer is, you know, we believe that through help with our partners in dentistry and general dentists and the programs like the University of Texas is to get the word out and save lives. Because literally, if you find it early, the treatment of oral cancer is relatively painless. It's a quick surgery if you find it early. If you find it more advanced like mine, I've had half of my jaw removed and replaced with my fibula after going through radiation and chemotherapy, which is some of the most brutal things you'll go through.
Right.
So the earlier we can find it, the better.
How are you reaching out to the gay community? Or are you specifically targeting them? Or
In Seattle, and that's where I'm from, the very first Seattle Oral Cancer Awareness Walk was put on by Pike Place Dental. And Dr. Kent Devenier is a proud member of the gay and lesbian community up there. And we did the very first speech I did, and we reached out to the largest gay and lesbian business community out there, their Chamber of Commerce, and wonderful support, by the way. Talk about people that care, you know, and they came out and supported us in full measure. In fact, Dr. Kent Devenier is one of our largest contributors nationally for donations or whatnot.
Do you have a national campaign to reach out, or are you just kind of doing the walks around the country?
Oh, we do have it. In fact, funny, he got more press when he came out and talked about his wife through a second-rate newspaper, but Michael Douglas did a public service announcement for the Oral Cancer Foundation last year. It didn't get as much press as when he kind of ran off at the mouth to The Guardian, but either way, the news is out there that HPV and oral sex causes cancer, and that, to me, you know, it's too bad for him that he got such negative press, but I would call him a hero for putting it out there.
Definitely adding some spotlight to this issue.
You gotta have it. And, you know, it's little known, but the Paltrow Foundation, Gwyneth Paltrow's father, Bruce Paltrow, actually died of oral cancer.
I didn't know that.
Most people didn't. And they put together the Bruce Paltrow Oral Cancer Fund, and they partnered with the Oral Cancer Foundation nationally, and doing a lot of great work. In fact, Blythe Danner has been on several talk shows getting that word out, and has been such a wonderful spokesperson for the disease. In fact, in the Stand Up to Cancer event last year, where Gwyneth Paltrow was the host of, she was wearing an OCF bracelet when she was up there speaking.
OCF, Oral Cancer Foundation.
Oral Cancer Foundation.
I know this might be a bit of a broad question, but like, what sort of things can people do in their day-to-day life to cut down on the risk of oral cancer?
You know, they're a great question.
Good question.
Thanks for putting that out there. HPV 16 is the number one cause of oral cancer right now, and there are two companies make a vaccine for that, Gardasil and Cervarix, and both of them will protect you against HPV-related cancers. Sadly, the penetration of those vaccines into our population is really small, but we encourage, you can start getting that vaccine at 12 years old, and they cut that off at 27. Having gone around to a lot of the major college programs, especially I was just in Boston speaking to theirs, and a large amount of our college students still haven't had that vaccine. So going out there and getting our young people vaccinated will certainly save, and that should protect them against anal, penile cancers, cervical cancers, and of course oral cancers. And all of those cancers are actually on the rise due to this disease. And knowing that there's a vaccine out there that can protect them, it's something that we need to get the word out.
Okay, let's hit the walk one more time. It's this Saturday at Studi Park.
Correct, and you can go online and register now, or you can register on site.
What is the website for them to go to?
It is donate.oralcancer.org.
All right. Well, thank you for this very fascinating and informative interview. I appreciate you coming on, Eric and Susan, and come out to the walk on Saturday.
Great.
Thank you so much.
This is Queer Voices.
What converts a KPFT listener into a contributor? One reason is a deep concern about community. Many people who give tell us that, yes, having KPFT available is personally important. But equally important is making sure that anyone in the area has access to news and music programs that deliver more than just sound bites. That anyone has access to thoughtful discussion programs. That anyone has access to radio that is free of commercial influence. As you consider whether to give to KPFT, think beyond the value you receive. Think about the value KPFT delivers to the community. Think about how your gift, right now, makes it possible for anyone to discover and benefit from KPFT. Then please, become a new member of KPFT. The process takes just a few minutes of your time, and you're not only doing something good for you, you're doing something good for the entire community. Please call 713-526-5738 right now, and give as generously as you can. That's 713-526-KPFT. Thank you.
In a chaotic world cluttered with sights, sounds, and messages, we're grateful you chose to land on KPFT for this part of your day.
No matter what happens with the economy, the climate, healthcare, or the war, you'll hear about it on KPFT.
That's why you listen, and it's why we're asking for your financial support today.
KPFT's membership is an investment that gives something back to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
KPFT depends on listeners like yourself for well over 90% of our operating budget.
Consider how much KPFT adds to your life while you are listening at home, work, and in your car.
Financial support from our members ensures that we continue to bring you the programs and services you've come to enjoy.
So please, make your contribution now.
Here's the number to call.
713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT.
Who needs a car and a 747 when you can't buy a gas?
Go green and get rid of your old gas guzzler. KPFT will take your car, running or not, and turn it into a different kind of green. Money for the radio station. It's easy. Call our toll-free number at 1-855-573-8227 and let us haul away your vehicle and give you a tax receipt for your donation. Call now or go to kpft.org and click on More Ways to Give. We are listener-sponsored, commercial-free Pacifica Radio. KPFT, Houston.
There's no more left to buy and sell. There's no more oil left in the well. The gallon of gas can't be purchased anywhere.
Any amount of cash.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT, Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Just sing if you're happy. This way.
That was an interesting promo to talk about. Yes, we know you have a choice. It's so much easier nowadays to be able to listen to a radio station almost anywhere in the world, or some podcast, or watch TV stations from all around the world, whether it's BBC or Al Jazeera's or entertainment programs. Back in the day, I remember when there was only three TV stations. So we really appreciate that you stick through in listening to KPFT during this time when we spend a lot of time asking for money. And you can easily switch the channel and go somewhere else and listen to something else. You're really dedicated listeners, and I'm sure that you're probably tired of hearing us asking for your help. But the reality is, that's how we keep on going. We don't get money from advertisers. We don't get money from corporations. We get a little bit of money from grants and a little bit of money from the government, although it's shut down now. We certainly don't get any local money or state money from government. KPFT is a station that sort of lives marathon to marathon, like a lot of people live check to check, because we invest all the money we make to keep the station going. And we really don't have much of a surplus. And I think everybody wishes our marathons, our fundraisers could be less time than we do. But the reality is we need to do it to survive, to keep on the station going. We're certainly grateful that we have all the volunteers that keep the station going and do programming between the music and the public affairs and the news that we do here on KPFT, and some of the stuff we get off the satellite, like Democracy Now, so that you could have a different perspective of what's going on. Because, I love my mother, but she just watches Fox News all the time,
oh,
from morning to night. And, you know, they believe this stuff that goes on there. And my mother's not a stupid person, but she just gets indoctrinated to that thing from morning to night. And it's really sometimes difficult to talk to her about things. And not to say that I'm always right. I'm certainly not always right. And that's why I do listen to, you know, shows here on KPFT and other non-commercial stations. And I listen to a lot of different things on television and radio, and try to read the newspaper, and I'm confused a lot about what's going on. So it's hard to keep up with the things, and I know if you've got a busy life, it's hard to do it, but KPFT gives you some of the perspective that you won't get anywhere else, and it's a real special place. So we're asking you to please be part of our family here. And I know I say dysfunctional family, but sort of that's the truth. But we also have a number of different items that we can thank you with. You can call up our operators, and they have some neat things that are offered as premiums. But I think most people pledge because they really believe in what goes here
on KPFT. So call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT, or you can also give to directly online at kpft.org.
Now, if you're listening to us on Tuesday or Wednesday and you're listening to our podcast or on iTunes where you can download the podcast, you can still donate online, and be sure to specify queer voices. Just go to kpft.org and click donate now, and there'll be a drop down list of shows, and Queer Voices will be one that you can pick. We need to have you do that so we can get credit for it towards our goal. So go online, if you're listening to me on Tuesday or Wednesday, kpft.org, click donate now and select Queer Voices, or call us now, 713-526-5738.
Tables nightly down at Joe's on Highway 2. Daughter Jean started acting strangely. She cut her hair, she's wearing old man's boots. Then at home they were getting dinner ready. Jean said she had something to tell. Started seeing someone pretty steady. Mom, she said, her name's Danielle. If you believe in work, God, what are you gonna do? When God sets his sights on you. Mary Ann stared at her daughter. I taught you better, I am sure. Let's get on our knees and pray out these demons. I can't see my daughter anymore. Jean grabbed a coat and she set out running down to the river and the creek. Up her mouth and she did sing. If you believe in the word of God, what are you gonna do? When God sets his sights on you. If you believe in the word of God, what are you gonna do? When God sets his sights on you. She's got love to give. A life to live. Jean spent all night staring at the river, splashing and racing off so far. Then she grabbed a truck, favorite kitten, toothbrush, couple of shirts, and a mom's guitar. She turned the key, flipped on the headlights, blazed up against the autumn corner. Mary Ann's face flickered in the doorway. Jean just drove off to California.
That was Eli Connolly from the album At the Seams. The title of the track, When God Sets His Sights on You. This is Queer Voices.
This is Jack Valensky.
And this is Brian Levinka.
We here at KPFT, because we're a nonprofit organization, do not endorse any candidates. Tonight, we're interviewing Jennifer Poole, who is running for at-large number 3. If you want to, if you're a candidate also running this race and you'd like to be on the show, you can contact us, jack@queervoices.org, because like I said, we do not endorse any candidates. This is basically an informational interview. Jennifer has been part of this radio show for a number of times, and she had to take leave of absence because she's running for political office. So, Jennifer, how is the campaign trail?
Well, the campaign trail is full of events, and it, months ago, it might be one or two, maybe three events a week, and now it is crammed into two, three, four a day. It's like everybody suddenly woke up right after Labor Day and said, oh, gee, there's a city election coming up, and we need to do something about that. And I'm talking about basically organizations and different groups that this want to have a part in choosing who the next city council member is. And so they want to screen the various candidates and talk to them and find out what where they stand.
So you're running for at-large 3, which is a covers the entire city, and you have how many opponents?
I have 5 opponents in my race.
Okay, and this is an open seat. It's term limited by Melissa Noriega. So what are some of the issues that you're talking about to the community about?
Well, first I was going to say, I'm grateful I only have 5 other candidates. I ran in 2011, and I had 9 other candidates. So I felt like, you know, hey, we've whittled it down. This is more manageable.
Yeah, there's 12 in District D.
Yes. Somebody had told me 13, but I guess somebody didn't show up to file.
Somebody didn't file on time, I bet.
So what are some of the issues you're talking about?
Well, and that was what I was going to say. There are a lot of different issues, and it sounds like various people talk about similar things in their own special way. But for me, I talk about the basics of the city. One, as an LGBT person who has lost their job, been kicked out of their home, and been denied service in a restaurant, I would like to see an anti-discrimination ordinance for the city. I know there's some people that argue we need to change the charter, but I don't want to wait till 2015 for that. I think that the city council should go in and vote it in, and then it would run for 2 years before the 2015. I think people would find that, well, the world didn't come to an end with it, and people will understand that Houston is a 21st century city. It respects everyone. We have so much diversity here, and there are no protections codified in our city ordinances.
Now, you also have worked with the Buildings and Standards Commission. What exactly does that do?
The Buildings and I've been on there. Mayor White appointed me first, and the mayor has reappointed me twice. So I've been on there almost 5 years. The Buildings and Standards Commission is responsible for neighborhood protection. It's under that department. And the what we examine and hear hearings on are buildings that are considered or recommended as dangerous buildings. We have a hearing. The property owner is given the opportunity to make some changes or agree to repair their property or protect their property from vagrants and other illegal activities that are possible there. Also keep them clean. And we can also, if it's damaged enough due to whatever circumstances, we can declare it a dangerous building and order it torn down.
What is some of the big issues that you see that the city's facing in the next couple of years?
Well, I think the biggest one that is still haunting the city are pensions. I think that, you know, there was a commission put together to come up with recommendations on what to do with the pensions, that some of those were acted upon. Some required the legislature. well, the legislature didn't take action, so therefore we're right back where we were 2 years ago when I ran. But it goes back even further than that. It goes back to when the mayor first ran and she took office and she looked at that problem directly because she'd had to deal with it as controller. The other thing that a projected deficit in the budget for the next physical year is looming. I haven't been privy to any inside information, but my conversations I've had with Ron Green, that is a possibility, not a fact. Our city is a vibrant business city, and because of that, we're generating more sales tax revenues. Property values are going up, so without raising any the property taxes, we're getting more revenue off the existing property. So this has a factor in there that we don't know, especially the economic activity, the boom era, if you will, that we're having here in Houston. If it will carry on for several years out, projections are we're still good for about 5 years.
Okay, and so with this boom that seems to be happening, and as you read the national press, it seems that, you know, this is now the coolest city and the place to move to, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There also comes a lot of concerns about, can our infrastructure keep up with this growth?
That is the single biggest concern that I have. Because we don't have zoning in our city, Chapter 42 has been used to give guidelines to the development of the city. However, it's not a panacea. It's not going to solve everything. And one of the things it doesn't do, it's approved higher densities, but we needed to have some sort of checks and balances on it that to make sure that the infrastructure was there. A neighborhood maybe with a couple of three bungalows on it, and someone comes in, they take down a house or two, and they want to put up high-density housing. Well, what end up happening, if the infrastructure isn't there, the water, the sewer, then all the people who have been living there most of their lives in the bungalows suddenly are having problems with their water and sewer because of the pressure being placed upon it. City has done a very good job of trying to manage that, but we're growing at an exponential rate. The developers are building houses all over the city. My company that I have that I started over 15 years ago, that's what we help people do. We help them get permits and licensing and occupancies and so on and so forth. So I've always been on the cutting edge of what's going on in the city. And this building that's going on now is very similar to what we had during the boom era of the 80s.
How well do you know, I mean, what you're running for is part of a legislative body. How well do you know and or can get along with the other council members and the mayor, as this is a strong mayoral form of government?
Well, one thing, and to disagree without being disagreeable, it's really not a legislative branch. We are a deliberative branch as the council. Because of the strong mayoral system, the mayor pretty much proposes, and our action is only in deliberating on it, maybe delaying it, maybe making or offering amendments to it. But the actual initiation, it takes at least three council members working together to propose something to the mayor, but she still has to put it on the agenda. So we're more a deliberative body. Now, that being said, most of the council members that are already on there and which may appear to be reelected are people I already know that I've been working with for years. When I was president of the caucus first in 2005, a lot of them that are on council and that subsequently between 2005 and 2008 were elected and are still serving, some in their last terms and some not. But I have always been able to work with other people. It's one of the hallmarks of my whole career is that I can take a group of people who seemingly don't have anything in common and bring them together to a commonality to find what they do agree on and find some consensus so that city can move forward in that, or the organization or wherever it's been in my own history. The city has some great issues that need to be addressed. I'm looking forward to working with the mayor. Amnese Parker and I have been friends for over 20 years, and so I have a sensitivity that I would like to see her there. But no matter who wins, I'll be able to work with whoever it is.
Now, I understand that in your business you deal a lot with the permitting center.
Yes.
And I know you have told me that there are some problems there.
Oh, where do I start? Anybody that follows me on Twitter can find me. I do a You've Got to Be Kidding report on occasion when I've been down there and some policy has been changed in midstream and suddenly it's made it more difficult and you don't see the logic in it. And that's where it gets you got to be kidding. And I report on that. So follow me if you want to know the day-to-day of it. Part of it is that the center was set up earlier than it should have. There were pressures to open it, but it was opened probably 4 months too soon because there was a lot of the infrastructure within the building that wasn't ready to handle the load of bringing all of the different departments in under one roof. In theory, bringing them under one roof should make it more efficient, smoother operation and all. Unfortunately, that's not what has been the practice. It has become more complicated. Let me digress a moment. I have been doing permits in the city of Houston since 1980 when I moved here. Okay, 33 years. It is more difficult now to get a permit than I've ever seen it in 33 years. More roadblocks, more fees, more different reviews. It has made